And welcome to the Sports Ticket, everyone. Wade Gerster, Dusty Donis, Jason Broadfoot with you. We got to get this out of the way real quickly. Dusty's late to the party. He usually is in the morning, which is okay. Hey, we're just jealous. We were talking about the best year of your life. Jason said? 94. Oh. He said 94. Mine was 1976 because that's when I came into the world.
Yeah.
And everybody's thankful for that, I'm sure.
That, right.
Yeah. So what's the best year of your life, Dusty? What's that year, man? This one gentleman called up and said, 1990, I met the woman of my dreams. I graduated high school from Grand Island, Nebraska, and I went to 4 concerts. He started telling me about the woman of his dreams. I said, I don't care about that. Who did you see in concert? Judas Priest, AC/DC, Def Leppard, Motley Crue in one summer or one year? That's pretty doggone awesome. No wonder 1990 is pretty cool for him.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 2015.
2015.
Yeah.
Royals won the World Series.
Royals won the World Series, but for me it was 2014 and the end of that was not good for me, right?
Right.
So 2015, getting out of the hospital, and actually at the beginning of 2015, meeting a lot of people that
sure
maybe saved my life. I don't know
right
how close I was to that, but just all the people that I was able to meet and the relationships that I was able to make just because they were taking care of me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then finishing all that and getting back to where I needed to be. So 2015, probably, it didn't start out great, but it ended very great.
I think a lot of people are going to say worst year 2020, but just going to throw that out on a limb there if you want to talk about worst year. All right, local sports. We got a lot of things to get to here today, and then Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, be with us. We're going to have an interview with the head coach of the track and field team, Ryan Isbell. It'll be a little bit outdated somewhat because we have new
that'll be predated.
It'll be predated. Okay. It won't be outdated. It'll be predated. But fill everybody in on whatever you want to local wise.
Yeah, I'll do athlete of the week first here. Again, we do have our athlete of the week, and that is Lakeside sophomore Ian Kersine. NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable athlete of the week is the only athlete from Lakeside competing. He had an outstanding day at the Northern Plains League powerlifting meet last Thursday in Wilson, took home the first place medal in the 173 pound weight class. In the process, he won all of the individual events as well, and a pretty big margin on most of them, except for the bench he won by just 5 pounds. But overall, he won the meet by 145 pounds over the second place finisher. He had a total of 890 pounds lifted there at the Northern Plains League meet. So Ian Kersine again from Lakeside, our athlete of the week. If you'd like more information on that, or if you want to nominate an athlete of the week, you can always visit our website at ncksports.com to find all the details for that. So again, that's our athlete of the week. Yeah, we do have high school track and field that was supposed to get started today for Beloit. Again, that has now been postponed to tomorrow, the Polk County Buff invite. So we are going to hear from Ryan Isbell here momentarily, the head coach of the Beloit Trojans. So anytime I say today, it actually means tomorrow in that interview. So if you hear that, I don't know how many times I said that in the interview, but that'll be tomorrow instead of today that the Beloit Trojans open out their track and field season. And so we'll hear from Coach Isbell here momentarily. On the schedule for today as well, at this point in time anyway, if any changes happen, we'll let you know. But the Lincoln Sylvan Lucas baseball team is at Wilson, a doubleheader starting at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And the Concordia boys tennis team is scheduled to host a triangular today at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Again, all the full spring sports schedules for the area can be found at ncksports.com. So again, the Beloit Trojan track and field team will open out their seasons tomorrow. They do have a fairly decent amount of experience coming back, and we talk a little bit about some of their state qualifiers in the interview, but they do have 4 of those back this year as they get set for the 2022 season, and obviously more athletes with experience and a good group of freshmen coming in as well that we'll chat about. And so again, Beloit now set to start their season coming up tomorrow at the Republic County Buff Invite, and we will hear from Ryan Isbell, the head coach.
And welcome back here on our Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Pleased to be joined by Ryan Isbell, the head coach of the Beloit Trojan track and field teams. Coach, getting set for the season here as you'll open out today with the Republic County Buff Invite. Just kind of looking at your squad and getting ready for the season here. I know you do have some kids that qualified for state that'll be back for you. Brent Walker was a champion in the javelin for you last year on the boys' side. And then Wyatt Brockman and Grady Seifert are both state qualifiers back. And then you do have one girl that qualified for state back this year, and J.C. Carter in the discus. So you do have some experience as far as that's concerned. But when you kind of look at those kids, how much do you lean on people like that have had experience to maybe help lead here and get your team where you want to be here this season?
Oh, yeah, Yeah, you know, quite a bit. We're pretty excited to get the season going, and we got a pretty good mix of kids, you know, from seniors, juniors, sophomores, freshmen. So certainly you want to look to those kids that have been through, you know, not necessarily, you know, those kids you mentioned aren't just, for the most part, one-year state qualifiers. They've been there multiple times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a lot of experience that they can kind of show to the other kids, and it even shows up in practice. You know, their work ethic, and they're at the front of the lines, and they're showing kids how to do things. And we got a lot of kids that step up and will do that have been a part of the program, and not necessarily state qualifiers, but kids that are, you know, still really good role models and show kids how to do things the right way. But we're really excited to get the season going. Looking forward to the meet up at Belleville. And the thing that excites us the most about that one is that, you know, it's unlimited entries. There's only five teams that go to it, but this time of year, you want to get everybody out and in their events and see what they can do. And that's what that meet has allowed for. It looks like it should be a pretty good day, and everybody, you know, there's that little bit of excitement and nerves and all that for some of these kids, because you have some first-time track kids too. But that excitement for that first meet, you know, get up there and see what they can do and move forward.
When you look at this year's squad, what are some of the things that you've noticed in practice? Is there anybody standing out, or maybe something that you maybe weren't expecting coming into this year, or is it pretty much what you were figuring?
For the most part, it's kind of what we figured. You know, nothing has really stands out, because you hammer on the same set of drills for all the kids, and mm-hmm. you know, some kids excel a little bit more at those just because they've been through them, and you know, the other kids catch on pretty quick and go through them as well. As far as, you know, full jumps and full throws and things like that, you know, we haven't had a lot of it. It's one of those things, when the season started, which was the last day of February, when you know when we could start, and it just seemed like you had so long to go to the first meet, and then all of a sudden you blink and it's here. But the kids have worked hard. I mean, that's one thing we've, as coaches have said, pretty much day in and day out, is how hard they work. We know a lot of them are out there for the social aspect of track and field. We get that, and that's fine. But when it's time to work, they work, and they have those leaders at the front, and everybody pretty well steps up and does what they're supposed to do. It's been a really good group to work with so far.
When you kind of look at the projections and seeing how some of your kids can do, what do you feel like maybe the ceiling is for success for your two teams here this year?
Well, that's a good question and a tough question mm-hmm. to answer. When track and field, in order to track it from year to year, you obviously got to know who's coming back, maybe kids that decide not to go out, but you also got to look at, you know, some junior high results, because it's very common for some freshmen, especially on the girls' side, to step in and compete and do really, really well. So we think we have that. We think we've added some kids that weren't out last year that can step in and be successful for us. So as far as how it stacks up against teams, you know, it's tough at this point of the year until you actually start to see some marks mm-hmm. and what people are doing out there. We know that from at least what we had at state, you know, that's going to be very competitive. We should be very competitive in all those events. And, you know, with those kids and those events, you can look at what's coming back even from state qualifiers, and we stack up pretty well. And, you know, there's a few kids back that were ahead of us maybe in shot and discus on the boys' side, and but even girls on the discus side for JC there, I think there's one kid that was in front of her that's back. So, you know, that's pretty promising for her, and we've got some young ones that'll step in right there with her too. And the good thing about it is everybody pushes everybody, and the great thing about track is that everybody supports everybody and everybody cheers for everybody. Mm-hmm. So even if it's a kid from another town, if you see something, you know, phenomenal, everybody cheers for it. And we hope we have some of those phenomenal performances that other people are cheering for also.
Ryan Isbell, head coach of the Lit Trojan track and field teams, here previewing the season. Coach, we thank you for the time, and best of luck as you open out at Belleville today.
Yep, thanks, Dusty.
Yes, again, track meet now tomorrow instead of today for the Lit Trojan track and field teams. So they'll get going with the Republic County Buff invite with those five teams that are there tomorrow and get things rolling for the Lit Trojan track and field. A couple other teams will be starting track tomorrow as well, so we'll tell you about that. Again, full schedules are always posted at ncksports.com.
All righty. Just like you expect, last day of March, snow on the ground when we wake up. That's spring in Kansas. Don't like it. Just wait a little while, and you'll hate it even more. K-State head coach Jerome Tang has introduced another member of his staff. Tang named Marco Bourne his chief of staff. Bourne has 20 years of experience, including 14 years as head coach of the high school NAIA levels. Also head coach of the Haitian junior national team, assistant coach for the senior national team for 4 years. And so he joins the staff for K-State. St. Peter's looking for a new head coach. This is what happens in your small school. You have all this kind of success. You have a great tournament, and then you lose your coach. Shaheen Holloway is going back to his alma mater where he played for 4 years there at Seton Hall. He'll get a 6-year deal and a gigantic raise. He was making $266,000 a year as a head coach of St. Peter's. And you may say, well, that's not bad. Compared to everybody else making $2 million or more in every big conference, that seems like nothing. And he beat John Calipari, who makes, what, $43 million a year or something like that? Okay, might not be quite that much. But I still think that's the crazy number is four assistant coaches for Kentucky made more than Shaheen Holloway, the head coach of St. Peter's, and St. Peter's beat him in overtime. I still enjoyed that one. The Royals have named their opening day starter. More on that in a moment. Kyle Isabel, who is not related to Ryan Isabel. Homer for the second straight game, a two-run shot in the ninth, too little, too late. Royals now 7-4 in spring training, lost to the Giants yesterday. 9-5, they'll take on the Oakland Athletics this afternoon. And the season opener is exactly 1 week away. The Royals open the season next Thursday at Kauffman Stadium. It'll be an evening game, which is very rare for opening day, but because of the owner's lockout, we had to change the schedule a little bit. And it is Zach Greinke that will be the starter opening day for the Royals. I'm a little bit surprised by this, but it makes sense once you think about it. And this is pretty crazy. He was the opening starter back in 2010. Now he'll be the opening day starter in 2022. So that's some staying power for Zach Greinke. And then they'll throw a whole bunch of young guys after him. They'll probably be Keller and Lynch and then Singer and Bubich and whoever else the Royals will have. So the veteran, 38-year-old Zach Greinke, will get the start on opening day for your boys in blue. Speaking of the boys in blue, you can go with us on a Royals bus trip May 22nd. The Royals host the Minnesota Twins. It's afternoon game at 1:10. We'll get there about 12:30. We'll leave Beloit at 8 a.m. If you'd like to go on a bus trip, we've got snacks. We've got water, pop. We have a blast. We have so much fun on this bus trip. You don't have to drive. You can just kick back, relax. You can take a nap. You can listen to music. You can just take the whole thing in, whatever the case may be. We do stop to eat on the way back from the stadium. Pretty much go straight there, too. And once again, you just kick back and relax. And we have trivia. We give away prizes. And you could be on that bus trip with us on May 22nd. Call us, 545-3220, to reserve your seat or seats. Or if you simply have questions as to how much it costs and so forth and so on, we can tell you that as well. For anybody that's gone in the past, it's the exact same price it was before. So if that helps you out there. And I did look up, we've gone the 4 Royals bus trips previously. The last 2 years we haven't because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And the Royals won the first one on a walk-off in the 13th inning, which was fantastic and phenomenal and unbelievable and insanely great. And yes, we got home a lot later because the game went long, but the Royals won, walk-off home run. That was fantastic. And and now they haven't won since when we've gone. They lost their last 3. They lost to the Angels when Matt Harvey, believe it or not, was pitching for the Angels. They lost to the Indians 1-0. I think the Royals got one hit the whole game. That was like in the second inning. And the Royals lost to the Yankees, which we knew was going to happen the last time we went. And we took about probably of our 50 people on the bus, I think 20 were Yankee fans. New York money, it cashes and deposits just as well as Kansas City money. So if you're a Twins fan or if you're a Yankee fan and want to go watch the Twins Royals, whatever the case may be, you just want to get away and from the kids or something, and you want to go on a bus trip and have a good time and watch some baseball, whether you're a Royals or Twins fan, call us up, 545-3220. The first game of Albert Pujols' second stint with the Cardinals couldn't have gone much better. Pujols went 1-for-3. That's not great. What's the big deal here, Wade? Oh, the Cardinals only scored 29. 29-8 in the Grapefruit League yesterday over the Nationals. Safe to say the Nationals need to work on the pitching. At least based on what those
based on that game, yeah.
Wow.
15 in one inning, I saw.
That inflates your ERA just a tad. Just a tad. The big news in the sports world yesterday, and it came later in the day, in fact, last night, Bruce Arians, fed up with Tom Brady, can't put up with him anymore, is retiring. That's how rumors get started, by the way. Bruce Arians is retiring as a head coach and will move to the Tampa Bay Buccaneer front office. Bucs defensive coordinator Todd Bowles has been picked to replace Arians as a head coach. Arians was head coach in the NFL for 8 years, 5 in Arizona, 3 in Tampa Bay, 80-48 his record, 31-18 with the Bucs, and of course the Super Bowl win, as we all know, unfortunately, when they beat the Chiefs in Super Bowl 55. This will be the second opportunity for Todd Bowles as head coach. He went 24-40 in 4 seasons with the Jets from 2015 to 2018, so that means that we now have 4, I believe now, coaches in the National Football League that are of minority, and so Todd Bowles becomes one. And what's interesting is this was very sudden. Nobody really saw it coming, Bruce Arians. Everybody thought, well, Brady's coming back. Arians, of course, was going to be back, whether Brady wasn't. And all of a sudden, this is a very late time to step away. But based on what I'm reading and hearing, I believe Bruce Arians planned this all along. Because he made it to where only Todd Bowles could be the head coach. And you may say, well, why would he do that? Well, first of all, Bruce Arians, and I'm not trying to make this a racial thing, but I just want to point out the facts. Bruce Arians is a white man, all right? And Todd Bowles is a black man. And Bruce Arians, back when he played in the 1960s, quarterback at Virginia Tech, was the first white player to have a black roommate. He's been a champion for diversity in the NFL for years. He's added women to his staff. He's had three black coordinators on his staff. He's really been a great teammate for black coaches and women and minorities in the National Football League. And according to some things I've read, is that he may have been kind of planning this for the timing to make sure that Todd Bowles was going to be the head coach. Like, if he would have retired at the end of last season, they would have done a coaching search, and Bruce Arians would have had no say, and they probably would have hired another retread white coach. Maybe, maybe not. Whoever's most qualified, don't get me wrong, whoever's most qualified should be the coach. No matter of skin, no matter of gender, whoever's the most qualified should be the head coach. In this case, stepping down March 30th means that it has to be somebody on your staff, and the only guy on the staff that has head coaching experience, that obviously Todd Bowles would be the perfect guy, and many people are saying now that Bruce Arians knew all along what he wanted to do here, and he made sure Todd Bowles got this job. The other thing is Todd Bowles took a job, and granted it was his choice, but here's what happens. For African-American coaches, many times they don't get a second chance. They get a head coaching job, and where do you usually go when there's a head coaching job? A cruddy situation. Mm-hmm. Whether you're white or black, you go to a cruddy situation typically because, obviously, you're floundering and you need a new head coach. You fired yours. So any coach, regardless of color, is going to go into a tough situation. The thing is, we see a whole bunch of other coaches get second and third chances. Dennis Allen's another one recently, Josh McDaniels, and then other guys like Leslie Frazier can't get a second chance, and he's an outstanding coach, but had his one chance as a head coach of Minnesota, and actually wasn't that horrible. And other guys don't, you know, Eric Bieniemy doesn't even get a chance, but maybe he's a horrible interview and he doesn't deserve a chance. I don't know, don't want to go there, but I do know that Todd Bowles was good enough for the New York Jets to be hired, and he was thought highly of when he was with the Jets. It's just that they didn't have a good team. And sometimes the coach can do all he can, but if you don't have the organization getting the players for you, you know, or you don't have the quarterback, as we know, a quarterback can make a coach look a lot smarter than they really are. Okay?
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And Bruce Arians did not want Todd Bowles. First of all, he didn't know if Todd Bowles would get a second opportunity. He wanted to make sure he did. And he also wanted to make sure that Todd Bowles was in a good situation whenever that second opportunity arose. And right now, it's a great job. You have the Buccaneers, a team that, if they didn't have injuries, might have been in the Super Bowl again last year. 2 years ago, won the Super Bowl. You have the GOAT back playing football, the quarterback Tom Brady. You got a lot of guys that are re-signing, staying with the team, and so forth and so on. And basically, Bruce Arians wanted to make sure that Todd Bowles, that the situation was right, and that Todd Bowles could succeed, according to people close to the situation. In fact, Arians said in a statement last night, "I wanted to ensure when I walked away that Todd Bowles would have the best opportunity to succeed. So many head coaches come into situations where they're set up for failure, and I didn't want that for Todd." I think Bruce Arians should be commended. Am I ticked off that him and the Buccaneers kicked the living daylights out of my Chiefs? Yes, upset about it, but he did his job. All right, his team was prepared. Todd Bowles made defensive adjustments in that Super Bowl compared to the first game when the Chiefs and Tyreek Hill, who no longer is with the team, went off for, you know, 200 yards in the first quarter, I think it was. It was unbelievable. They couldn't stop him. That was when Tyreek Hill went and said, "Somebody call somebody, they need help," or whatever. And then, of course, they shut down Tyreek Hill in the Super Bowl, and they shut down the Chiefs' offense, so forth and so on. Todd Bowles is a big part of that. Todd Bowles is a brilliant, brilliant defensive mind. He's a very, very good coach, a brilliant coach. But he now will get a second opportunity that a lot of minority coaches don't get. And I don't think would have got this one either if not for Bruce Arians, who really vouches and does a lot of good things to help minorities, including women. And women are minorities in the National Football League. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
There's very few women coaches in the National Football League. We're starting to see a little bit of advancement. We're starting to see even some women get into some upper office, front office situations a little bit more, which is great. People talk about more diversity. I don't think there's anything wrong with more diversity. The question is, should you have to interview somebody, whether they're going to hire them or not? And that's a whole nother topic for another day. But I think you got to commend Bruce Arians, whether you like him or not. Chiefs fans probably like, "Oh, I don't like him because he beat us." Well, too bad. They beat us. I commend him for doing this because I just hope Todd Bowles, here's the thing. I want Todd Bowles to be successful, but not too successful that he win a Super Bowl beating the Chiefs in Super Bowl 57.
I want Todd Bowles to be successful once Tom Brady retires.
Ah, I'm good. There you go. Good. I like that. I want Todd Bowles to be successful, get to the playoffs, and lose in the divisional round like last year. Yeah. I'm okay with that. You can take your playoff spot. You're in the NFC. You're not with the Chiefs. I don't care. Just don't get to the Super Bowl.
Or if you do, make darn sure you're horrible, and then we roll you and get a little payback.
I was looking up his record for the story, and I didn't realize the Jets went 10-6 his first year there.
Yeah, he had a good year first year.
Good that first year, and then 5-11, 5-11, 4-12, and that's why he was no longer the coach of the Jets anymore, just based on what.
Well, the other problem about the New York job is you're under so much scrutiny, the media coverage, and so forth and so on. Whereas Tampa's not as bad. So, and of course Brady will take a lot of that attention away, which is a good thing.
Absolutely,
it kind of deflects. So Todd Bowles is in a very, very good situation there in Tampa Bay. So good for Todd Bowles and good for Bruce Arians to step away. You know, he's had some heart issues before. He won a Super Bowl. There's not much else for him to accomplish. No. You know, his legacy is set, I would imagine. And the Wooden Award, given the most outstanding player in men's college basketball. No Cornhuskers or Blue Jays on this list. I'm sorry, Jason.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Ochai Agbaji of KU is one of the finalists, along with Johnny Davis of Wisconsin, Drew Timme from Gonzaga, Kentucky's Oscar Tshiebwe, and Keegan Murray of Iowa. What's interesting is that two of the guys lost in the first round and to much lower seeds, and one guy lost in the second round to a much lower seed, and the other guy lost in the Sweet 16 to a four seed. The only one still playing, of course, is Ochai Agbaji. So KU has the best player left in the tournament, although he hasn't played like the best tournament player, obviously. I mean, defensively hasn't
been
bad.
Up that second half
against
Miami, and you got a guy there.
I do think he needs to be a little bit more aggressive, look for a shot, a little bit more selfish at times.